the Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Good morning. Welcome to this virtual session of the Supreme Court of Virginia. We welcome the lawyers who will argue before us today, and we also welcome the members of the public who are listening on a audio feed that has been made available for that purpose. The clerk will call the first case.
Dill versus Kroger Limited Partnership 1 et al., Lauren M. Byrne, Appellants Counsel, Victor S. Scaff III, Kathleen K. Memmer, Appellees Counsel.
Ms. Byrne, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Lauren Byrne, and I represent Shirley Dill, the appellant plaintiff in this case. Ms. Dill brought this action against Kroger and manager Sarah Lynch for the intentional torts of malicious prosecution and false imprisonment after Ms. Dill was wrongly prosecuted for two counts of shoplifting from the Kroger store. At trial, at the close of Ms. Dill's case in chief, Kroger moved to strike the evidence. And in ruling on the motion, the trial judge stated, quote, "Unfortunately, this is my view of the case. This is a mistake case." The judge then took what this court has deemed to be a drastic measure and granted Kroger's motion on each count and dismissed Ms. Dill's entire case. And at its core, this was error for one foundational reason. The court undertook tasks that were reserved for the jury. At the close of plaintiff's case in chief, the trial court was not permitted to perform a bench trial. Instead, the court was required to view all the evidence in the light most favorable to Ms. Dill, granting her any and all reasonable inferences therefrom. And this includes both direct and circumstantial evidence. The trial court did not honor this court's clear jurisprudence regarding the standard of review and the role and province of the jury. Specifically, the trial court erred by one, finding the absence of malice, and two, finding the presence of probable cause. These two questions are kind of interrelated, but I will try to address them succinctly. First, in an action for malicious prosecution or false imprisonment, the necessary wrongful intent is labeled as legal malice. In other words, Kroger acted with an improper motive or intent when initiating the prosecution or the arrest of Ms. Dill. And determining a person's true intent or their motive, however, it is a task reserved for the jury. This court has said the existence or the non-existence of malice is, quote, always a question for the jury under all the circumstances of the case. That was Gina Virginia versus Pig and also Clinchfield Cole versus Red. This is so because, in part, a person's motive and intent is rarely proven by clear, direct evidence. Instead, circumstantial evidence is often considered, and the jury is charged with weighing and assessing all the evidence, direct and circumstantial, and determining whether the conduct constitutes legal malice. But upon ruling on the motion to strike, the trial court stated, quote, "It was a mistake. It was her error. I'm sure she regrets that she made the mistake." But that was an improper finding of fact and intent. And secondly, the finding of probable cause is similarly a task reserved for the jury. This is so because the question of whether probable cause exists, it involves an objective inquiry. Did the facts and circumstances warrant a reasonably prudent person in behaving as the defendant did? The jury is asked to determine whether Manager Lynch's alleged belief and her conduct was reasonable. Manager Lynch testified that she believed the woman was Shirley Dill. She was merely investigating a potential shoplifting. But the jury got to decide, in light of all the evidence, whether Manager Lynch's stated belief was reasonable and prudent. At trial, the local attorney, Mr. Frank Micah, he testified that he viewed the video surveillance footage. And in his words, he said, "You would have to be blind to think that was Shirley Dill." This certainly provides sufficient evidence for a reasonable juror to conclude that Sarah Lynch's confident belief, as she stated, that the shoplifter was Shirley Dill, that was not reasonable or prudent. It was simply not enough for Manager Lynch to defend her confident identification of Ms. Dill by testifying that she really truly believed it was Shirley Dill. The court seemed to fully accept Lynch's explanation and then found it sufficient to prove probable cause. But this is incorrect. This court has firmly rejected a similar argument in the case of Giant of Virginia versus Pig, which was another malicious prosecution case. There, the defendant suggested that his subjective belief was sufficient for probable cause. But the court said no. If that were the case, then the defendant would be the final arbiter of probable cause. And that is not the law. Again, it was the jury who was tasked with determining whether Manager Lynch's belief was reasonable. And the interplay between these two elements of malice and probable cause, it continues as the court has held that a jury may properly infer malice upon finding that the defendant lacked probable cause. Even in some of this court's earliest opinions, back in 1820, this court ruled that malice may properly be inferred from a want of probable cause. And it's the jury who gets to make that determination. When Ms. Dill's counsel reminded the court of this principle at trial, that a jury could indeed infer malice upon finding that probable cause did not exist, the court again stepped into the role of the jury and found there was probable cause. The court stated, quote, "They had probable cause from that video. The person that they saw on the video had taken dog food. While they were mistaken that it was Ms. Dill," the court continued, "I don't think that they lacked probable cause to think that the theft occurred on those days." But that is not the full inquiry. In the context of malicious prosecution, the inquiry requires an objective answer to both parts of the question. Did Manager Lynch reasonably believe that a crime had occurred? And did Manager Lynch reasonably believe that Shirley Dill had committed the crime? The court fully accepted Sarah Lynch's testimony as her personal beliefs and in effect made a credibility determination. And then he found that her subjective, wrongful belief as to the identity of the shoplifter sufficed to prove probable cause. But that is not the law. Indeed, in the case of Bennett versus R&L Carriers, this was an Eastern District of Virginia case applying Virginia law and then affirmed by the Fourth Circuit, the court found that yes, under Virginia law, malice may be proven by an inference from a lack of probable cause. The court even stated that the plaintiff does not have to explicitly identify an alleged improper motive. Instead, the jury can look at all the evidence, direct and circumstantial, and infer the improper motive based on a lack of probable cause. I also would like to respond to a few of the defendant's arguments that they made to the trial court when it ruled on this motion, and also that they have made before this court. Kroger continues to incorrectly interpret the principle discussed in Massey v. Firmstone. As seems to be very common before this court, Kroger asserts that the jury was bound to accept Sarah Lynch's testimony simply because she testified in plaintiff's case in chief. When Sarah Lynch testified this was a simple, innocent mistake, the defendants argue that the jury would have been bound to believe and accept that testimony. That is not the case. It's a very similar argument that was made to this court in the case of Robinson v. Copeland, which was a 2017 unpublished opinion. And there, the trial court also granted a motion to strike at the close of plaintiff's case in a malicious prosecution case. But this court reversed the lower court and remanded it for trial and said to the trial court that it had misapplied Massey. At this phase of the trial, which is the close of the plaintiff's case in chief, the court does not sit as fact finder, but instead the court rules on matters of law. The defendant also cited a couple other cases in its brief, Newton v. Veeney and Horn v. Milgram, also for this proposition that the jury was somehow bound to have to believe that Sarah Lynch was testifying credibly or honestly because she testified during plaintiff's case in chief. But in all of these cases, in Massey and its progeny, in Newton and in Horn, the court has always upheld the role of the jury. And in Horn, the court actually stated very clearly, quote, "It would have been error to take this issue from the jury, even if the plaintiff had voluntarily called the defendant as his witness." The court reiterated the unique province of the jury in weighing testimony and found it to be an area in which the court should not invade. Because that is precisely what the trial court did in this case and performed a bench trial, made credibility determinations, weighed the evidence, and then struck all of Ms. Dill's claim and dismissed her case, we would ask that this court reverse the trial court and remand this case for trial. Thank you.
All right, you have 5 minutes, 37 seconds remaining for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Ms. Memmer, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Kai Memmer, on behalf of the defendants Kroger Limited Partnership One and Sarah Lynch. Need to start by talking about the standard of review, and this court has reiterated it many times with regard to a motion to strike. This court did so most recently on Monday in the Barber versus Carilion decision that was put out. And again, yes, agree that the trial court must accept as true all evidence favorable to the plaintiff and reasonable inferences that might be drawn from the evidence. Again, the trial court, this court said, is not the judge to judge the weight and credibility of the evidence and may not reject any inference from the evidence favorable to the plaintiff unless it would defy logic and common sense. We didn't hear a lot about the evidence when Ms. Dill's counsel started this argument. And I think the evidence, and perhaps more importantly, the absence of evidence in this case is very, very significant. So I want to clear up some of those issues so that this court is well aware of what happened. This is absolutely a misidentification case. Ms. Lynch absolutely believed and had for quite a while that the woman she saw, who was a regular customer, the woman involved in the strawberry incident, was a woman named Shirley Dill. She had it in her mind that her name was Shirley. When the strawberry incident happened, she said, "Hey, Shirley." The woman looked at her, responded to Shirley. She believed the entire time that this woman was Shirley Dill. It was not until much, much later that she discovered this was not Shirley Dill. And in fact, I think it's important when we talk about motive and intent that when Ms. Lynch and Ms. Harrison, the loss prevention associate at Kroger, discovered that in fact the woman that they believed that had been involved in the strawberry incident was not. She was actually caught red-handed shoplifting. Ms. Harrison got her ID and it said Susan Rosenmeyer. And Ms. Harrison's reaction was, "I gotta call the police. I've gotta call Officer Green who investigated that earlier event. I need to tell them right away that there's been a misidentification." And that in fact is exactly what she did. And as Ms. Lynch testified at trial, as soon as she found out, she immediately went to Ms. Harrison and is like, "Wow, there's a problem there." And she said, "Yeah, I've already called. We've taken care of it." That's what happened. There was a misidentification case. The evidence, with all the arguments that went on at trial and all the arguments that are going on here, all the theories, the verbiage that's used, that Ms. Lynch targeted Ms. Dill, that Ms. Lynch had a vendetta against Ms. Dill, that Ms. Lynch and Ms. Dill had a strained relationship, all of those characterizations were never, ever borne out by the evidence that was presented at trial. At trial, what was borne out is that there was a prior a mention of Ms. Dill's name by a Dr. Pepper vendor who said that someone had taken his jacket. And so Ms. Lynch was given the name Shirley Dill. She never saw anything. She never confirmed that the man's jacket had ever been stolen. She never spoke to Shirley Dill. She never saw Shirley Dill. And then I suppose that the supposed terrible evidence in this case is that Ms. Lynch responded to an incident in the parking lot in September of 2015, some 17 months before the strawberry shoplifting incident. So 17 months before, a Kroger manager goes out to the parking lot to deal with an incident involving two third parties, two customers. Ms. Dill, who was pushing her cart, said that her cart had been hit or that she had been hit by another driver. It didn't involve Kroger liability. It didn't involve Ms. Lynch. It didn't even happen on Kroger property. And in basically kind of getting an incident report because it involved a Kroger customer who had left, she writes down in the report that it looks like personal observation is Ms. Dill is out for something. Her story changed a little bit when emergency services arrived. That's it. That's the evidence in this case. And so it seems to me that the theory is, Again, let's consider, does this evidence, what reasonable inference is there from that? And does the reasonable inferences that the plaintiff is asking us to believe, or Ms. Dill, does it defy logic and common sense? So what we must or we're asked to believe is, number one, that Ms. Lynch is lying. Yet there's no evidence to the contrary, that she truly knew who Ms. Dill was. She had a momentary interaction with the woman 17 months before the strawberry incident. So Ms. Dill would have us believe and basically argued that this vendetta or strained relationship began somehow in September of 2015. So how did she live out this vendetta? For 17 months, she laid in wait, having had a few minute interaction with the woman outside. And what did she write? Her story changed a little bit. She's out for something. Well, what if that reminds me in many of these cases of when we talk about, you know, is something in anticipation of litigation? When we investigate an incident and either based upon statements or behavior, we think, something might be coming around the bend on this one. Story changed a little bit. Something might be coming. It's anticipation of litigation. We know at that point there might be litigation coming. That's really the gist of what Ms. Lynch put in the incident report. But apparently, Ms. Dill would have the jury speculate, right, that for 17 months she lays in wait until she can live out this vendetta. And so what does she do? The culmination of the vendetta, she sees a lady at the U-scan, a lady who she has come to know from a third party. She doesn't live in Stanton. She comes from Waynesboro, and she asks this person in the store, hey, the woman, not the real Shirley Dill, but the strawberry incident woman, she sees her a number of times, and she said, hey, I see that woman around all the time. What is her name? And so this third party tells her that the woman's name is Shirley Dill. So in Ms. Lynch's mind, she walks around the store, wants to know her regular customers, and in her mind, she's certain that the woman's name is Shirley Dill. We've all been mistaken about names. And so she thinks that that's her name. And so when the strawberry incident happens, she says, hey, Shirley. And the woman looks at her, confirming in her mind her belief that the woman's name is Shirley Dill. I don't think you scanned those strawberries. And then the woman scanned them, and Ms. Lynch is watching, and something just doesn't hit her right. Something seems funny. And so she sends an email, doesn't accuse Ms. Dill at that point of anything other than, you know, it didn't look like she didn't scan her strawberries. So can you just look on video and see if she got us for something? That's what she did. So she would have this court believe and the jury speculate that this vendetta that has been lived out is going to culminate in, number one, not even knowing if an incident has actually happened, asking her loss prevention person to pull the video. And the plaintiff is asking that the jury be entitled to completely disregard the testimony of Ms. Lynch, to believe that she's not being truthful, to speculate that she is lying, but not based upon any evidence in this case. Not based upon the evidence in this case. And so to draw that out when, and why would you live out a vendetta by accusing someone who, as Ms. Byrne has stated, looks nothing like the real Shirley Dill? You theoretically know that, and you're going to stick it to a woman. So you say, look at a video, and then you find out that, in fact, something's been stolen, and then this all goes on. So how does this vendetta naturally end? It ends with, if the police officer does some of the right investigation, which Officer Green probably does in most of his cases, but he just didn't in this one. But in the natural course of events, she gets subpoenaed to trial, and there's a video. And the video shows that the woman looks nothing like Shirley Dill. So how does this vendetta end for Ms. Lynch? Pretty poorly. She's very, very embarrassed in front of the court. That's the evidence. And when they ultimately found out later that it wasn't her, they went right to the police department. They were as contrite as they can be. Oh, my gosh, we've made a mistake. That is not consistent with someone who has a vendetta, and there's no evidence of a strained relationship. Ms. Dill didn't know Ms. Lynch. She didn't know her name any more than Ms. Lynch knew Ms. Dill. Typically, in a malicious prosecution case, you're going to have a little bit more than that, but it wasn't present in this case. Now, Officer Green, if he had simply looked at the video and gone back to the police department and pulled the driver's license of Ms. Dill, he would have known immediately that there had been a misidentification. He didn't do it. And if he'd seen that, he probably would have pulled the driver's license picture on his system readily available to him, and not to Kroger, of Susan Rosenmeier. And he would have gone, wow, this is a misidentification. It's the other name that they gave me on the Kroger Plus card. It's not Shirley Dill. But he didn't
Counsel,
do that.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. May I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
How do you address the principle that the absence of probable cause, assuming there's a factual basis for concluding that, sort of shifts the burden of production, for lack of a better phrase? In other words, it does permit a legal inference of malice. How do our cases regulate that inference in the larger context of the totality of the circumstances?
Well, as you know, what's left in this case is only legal malice, and that's what we're looking at. Again, malice is defined as the controlling motive other than a good faith desire to further the ends of justice, to enforce obedience to the criminal laws, or suppress crime. There's no evidence that Ms. Lynch, again, back to evidence, there's no evidence that the trial court heard that Ms. Lynch or Ms. Harrison were doing anything other than their job and attempting to protect Kroger property and see the ends of justice were done. As this court recognized in Gott versus Piles, a 1971 case, a trespass case, that in that case there were aggravated circumstances that this court found. And that aggravated circumstances were when that particular person sought out charges for trespass, he had the ability to ascertain the ownership of land where he was a part owner, and he didn't do that. And so this court found that there were aggravated circumstances there. So there simply aren't those aggravated circumstances here. Again, when we're looking specifically, as you mentioned, in probable cause, again, probable cause is knowing such a state of facts or circumstances that excite the belief in a reasonable mind, acting on such facts and circumstances, that the plaintiff is guilty of the crime of which she is suspected. And this court resolved that question in Commissary Concepts, a 2004 case involving a Generous George's manager up in Northern Virginia. The facts in that case were, again, that little bit of a different case because the person was correct, the identification was correct, but there was no crime. In this case, we have absolute confirmation of crime, but a misidentification of the person involved. But this court in Commissary Concepts stated that if the evidence was insufficient as a matter of law to support a finding, again, we're looking at, was there reasonable basis to suspect that a crime had occurred? In Commissary Concepts, this court said yes. Here in this case, we know that the crime, in fact, did occur. But the court went on further to look at, and of course, in the malicious prosecution context, the court held that the evidence was insufficient as a matter of law to support the finding that the prosecution in that case was instituted without probable cause. And again, for malicious prosecution and for false imprisonment, the plaintiff has to prove that the defendants instigated or procured the prosecution. That wasn't mentioned, but that is certainly an important fact in this case, because as this court has been clear, again, it has to be instituted with or by the cooperation of the defendants. This court has stated back in King versus Martin long ago in 1928, that in that case where there was an armed robbery and a man and his mother separately identified in separate lineups the perpetrator of the robbery. They were then subpoenaed to trial. They participated in that. And ultimately, this court said that as a matter of law, Mr. King was not responsible for the prosecution. King versus
May I
Martin,
ask you another question, counsel? Was the absence of evidence that Lynch instituted the prosecution, was that a ground for the motion to strike, and was that addressed by the trial court?
It was argued in front of the trial court, and I do believe that the trial judge indicated that, and what he says on page 417 of the joint appendix, That is one of the elements of the claim. And again, from the jury instructions, it says malice exists when the controlling motive for instituting a criminal proceeding is any reason. And he said there was simply no evidence of it.
So the in theory, there can be malice, but if the malice is not a cause of a causative agent in bringing about the prosecution. So I see that you've raised that on brief. Is that an independent basis for your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. And if I may, I see that my time. May I proceed to answer your question?
Answer Justice Kelsey's question.
Yes. It is part of what we have argued. And again, on 416, the judge says there has to be the insistence or with the cooperation or at the assistance or at the direction of the person that's accused or the claim that's made. And there is no evidence. There was no evidence presented other than turning that information over to Investigator Green that they participated. They didn't even know what happened. That's on page 416 of the joint appendix.
Okay, thank you.
All right, your time has expired. Ms. Byrne, you have 5 minutes and 37 seconds left for rebuttal.
Thank you. Your Honors, Ms. Memmer made a wonderful closing argument, and I think that would have been an appropriate closing argument to make before the jury, as she is asking the jury to weigh the evidence, to assess the evidence, and to determine whether the evidence is sufficient or not. But at
Ms.
the stage
Byrne, if
of
I may
trial,
interrupt you, this is
yes,
Justice
Your Honor.
Kelsey. For the sake of argument, let's put aside the malice inference and just address the instigation of prosecution. Can you tell us what the factual basis is that Ms. Lynch actually instituted the prosecution when she had nothing personally to do whatsoever with the police?
Yes, Your Honor. In Clinchfield Cole versus Red, this court defined what that aspect of malicious prosecution means, and said that it would be instigating the prosecution or bringing about by the cooperation of the defendant. And specifically, this court said that this can be chargeable to the defendant from original steps taken by him to incite the prosecution or from subsequent adoption. And in this case, we have the original steps. Kroger did not abide by any of their normal policies and procedures when they decided to identify Shirley Dill as a shoplifter. Their policies and procedures were admitted before the court. The jury would have been able to review those. And those policies and procedures laid out a very particular way that Kroger employees are supposed to investigate shoplifting. They are a sophisticated retailer. They have their own loss prevention department, equipment, employees. And they did their pre-investigative work by pulling the videotape surveillance footage, by pulling the Kroger Plus card details, which means the card that the customer used when checking out of the U-Scan. They pulled all of that information in connection with the very specific email written by Sarah Lynch naming Shirley Dill and explaining what had happened. And then they put all of this information together. Miss Harrison, the loss prevention officer, testified that she did training receipts, and that was in order to provide the value of the property that was taken. And she performed all of her investigation and then called the police. She testified that she does not always call the police. There are often times when the police are never called and everything is handled in-house. But when she does call the police, it is so that they may press charges, they may prosecute this crime. And they did not call Officer Green and ask him to help them identify the shoplifter. That was never discussed. Instead, they very clearly told Officer Green that they knew who the shoplifter was, that a manager had identified the shoplifter as Shirley Dill because, quote, they had had previous dealings. Officer Green testified that he had nothing else to investigate. He did not have to go and figure out who this person was because this is not a regular citizen, but this is Kroger, and this is their loss prevention specialist and their manager who have identified a person who they have named as a shoplifter. Officer Green took this information and obtained probable cause based on their statements and the explanation of the events. He gained probable cause and was able to get the warrants. And so it would be our position that this is very much initiating the prosecution. This is not responding to requests for information when the police show up. This is not merely reporting that something has happened. We need the police to come and help investigate. Instead, this was a very specific and direct communication to the police, which was a shoplifting has occurred. This is what was shoplifted. This is how much it costs. We know that that impacts the type of charges that will be brought. They also testified that they gave contact information so that they could be subpoenaed for trial, knowing that that was part of this process. Sarah Lynch testified that she knew the police were going to be called. Gina Harrison testified that Sarah Lynch knew that the police were going to be called and that she did nothing to stop her. This was part of the process. And then it was the police who took that information, relying as they should be able to upon the leaders of Kroger, and then obtained the warrants for the arrest. Ms. Memmer also has testified, you know, as to what Sarah Lynch did once she found out. But again, this is viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Sarah Lynch. Officer Green testified that he does not recall that conversation. That's in his testimony. So again, at the phase of trial that the trial court, where the trial court was asked to rule on this motion to strike, the court was to take all this evidence, direct and circumstantial, view it in the light most favorable to Ms. Dill, and then allow the jury to assess and to weigh and to determine credibility before making its determination. So for these reasons, we would ask this court reverse the trial court's decision and remand this case for a jury trial.
Thank you very much. The clerk will call the next case.